There we go. I think it's due to the moon. I think it's due to the moon. I'm going to be very sorry when they land on the moon and it turns out to be just a bad real estate plot with a very terrible exposure. Actually, as you're probably aware, the moon, they say, gets to something like 400 degrees every day in a certain place. Yes, and nothing. Yeah, no, it's a very bad temperature there, very bad climate. And on the other side, it is always 400 degrees below zero, something like that. Of course, there's a lot of parking room there. There's plenty of places to park, and they haven't gotten yet parking meters up there, although the Kinney Brothers people are working. They've got a little thing going. But I suspect that it is the moon that's causing it all to come about this way. I don't know whether you've seen the new crop of television shows, speaking of moon madness, expensive turkey moon madness. I don't know whether you've seen that, the current crop of big, much-publicized clinkers that have appeared on television. I don't know whether or not our entire country is involved in moon madness of one kind or another. And eventually, when they're analyzing the moon madness problem that struck the Western world late in the sixth decade of the 20th century, I suspect they'll trot out a few Kinneys, a few films and a few tapes of a few selected prime evening hours on the big tube. I'm also a little bemused by some of the attitudes shown by some of the people who are running the fair currently. Have you heard some of the wonderful attitudes?
Well, I'd like to point out that allowing school children in at a reduced rate is not only a communist idea. It's an idea, yes, that could very well run the fair right into the red. And as all you know, the red is a communist color. This is not only a fair, this is a private money-making operation. And you let the kids get in free, and the next thing you know, no telling where it's going to stop. Oh, doing, doing.
I think it's the moon. I'm not sure whether it's the moon or whether it's a fluctuation in the ticker tape line somewhere along the way. Maybe it's sunspots. That could be it, too. I was looking. Take one brief look out of your pad now, if you can. A lot of people have been very nervous about looking out. But take a brief look out, and there is an fantastic moon, incredible moon tonight. And moons do wild things to people, whether or not we want to admit it. They really do. I notice at the time of the full moon, and this is a full moon time, the plague of wildly incoherent scrawled letters becomes even more incoherent and even more scrawled and even more wild at this time of the, and almost all of them have a certain line running through them, and the line is, you are after me personally. The world is not only a plot against me, you are spearheading it. One more thing like last night and I will call all of my attorneys to bear on you. And, of course, you see the shadow of a full moon falling over the Woolworth stationery, and you can't help but feel a little thing, you know, inside of you. And then you wonder how much you are affected by stuff like this, because nobody knows he is. No one admits it, that he grows claws and fangs roughly 2 or 3 days before the full moon. And then by the time of the full moon, he is covered with a thick coat of wiry, hairy fur. And shortly after the full moon, it begins to recede. And then about 2 weeks after the full moon, once again, he's the friendly little bald dentist who is the pillar of the local church and would not even harm a fly. In fact, has been known to walk around flies, more crippled flies, but nevertheless, you know. So I wonder about this thing of the moon. And tonight, I suspect we should do a moon show because the moon is there and it's... This is what they would call out in the Midwest a harvest moon. Here in New York, not much to harvest, a lot of cigar butts and a few things. You know, yeah, you go out in the fields there and you'll probably just get belted. That's about all you're going to get in the fields here. But nevertheless, it is a harvest moon. Now, a harvest moon, however, in the Midwest looks a little different from one here due to the atmosphere out there. The atmosphere is different. Now, I'm not talking about the psychological atmosphere, which is different also. But it's actually the atmosphere itself. And I can remember moons in Indiana. You know, there used to be a time when guys wrote a lot of songs about Indiana moons. And an Indiana moon is a very large, well, it's about three times the size of the moon that you see tonight, roughly. Anywhere from three to five times the size. Sometimes the moon is so big it looks like a phony. Really does. You think it's the Republican administration trying to wean more votes out of the clodhoppers out there by giving them something that, yeah, and there'll be a big sign in there brought to you by your Republican governor. But there is that fantastic moon hanging there over the stubble fields of Indiana. And it is a different color, too, Ed. The Indiana moon is a very dark, burnt orange color. Very dark color. This is the Indiana harvest moon. It comes about through a combination of air density. We could get very technical here with you. It's a very dull story because, you know, you start analyzing the density of the moon and analyzing the density of the air and why the moon is orange. Forget it. You're never going to write a poem about it. But the moon in Indiana is about the size, and one of the things they used to do, oh, it's just unbelievable, it's about the size of a basketball viewed close up, just about to get it in the left ear. Huge thing, covers the whole sky, and is a dark orange color, and has a peculiar kind of smoky quality to it, as though there is smoke somewhere involved in the color itself. And I can remember about this time of the year, one of the big things, of course, was to go out in the backyard about 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night and stand there and look at the moon. The whole neighborhood would be out looking at the moon, just standing around looking at the moon. And don't think that that was because they were such sensitive, poetic people. There wasn't much to look at around there. You know, you look at the moon if there's nothing else. Only Bruner once in a while drunk. That's pretty dull after a while. You get used to that. So when the moon, oh, yes, one of the better drunks, too, Bruner would throw, would be usually about this time of the year, and coupled with the moon madness, as well as that rotten Kentucky whiskey. And in addition to it being the Depression and nothing else to do with bay at the moon, there were some pretty wild nights out there among the clothespoles and next to the garage watching that moon come up over over Stafford's house, the one with the two stories there. And it was a scene, and so moons mean more to people where they can see the moon than they do here in the East. The moon doesn't play much of a part in most people's aesthetic lives here, except when they're say at the Brill Building, and they're the moon and you, baby. Oh, I love the moon. How do you like this, Manny? The moon and you and me. The moon and mana. That's about the extent of the moon. I wonder how many of these guys ever have seen a moon. you know, the guys that write this jazz. But that's all beside the point. The moon madness that is beginning to go over the world can be found in many different departments. It's political, it's psychological, it's sociological, it's economic. I'd love to hear Faye Henley once do a broadcast on the nuttiness that hits buyers down on Wall Street when the full moon comes up. I suspect that Ralph Houck may even protest to the league president that it was a full moon, and you know what that does to Mantle. But be that as it may, there was a little piece. The moon is beginning. I don't know whether it's the moon or what. It could be the tides of the sunspots. Listen to this little bit. Sinister Oriental music there, Eddie. Bang. Radio Indonesia brings you a special broadcast of special report from government in Jakarta. Radio Indonesia bids all Indonesians to stand by for special governmental decree. Jakarta President Sukarno yesterday denounced the twist, calling it, and we repeat here now his exact words, calling it a wild Western dance which is not part of Indonesian culture. He ordered arrest of student group in Jakarta which wanted to sponsor a twist festival Saturday.
and we quote wonderful speech by President Sukarno. You boys and girls, if you want to dance the twist, you better leave a country, Sukarno said. He banned all other, and we quote here, wild dance festivals, and said fashion shows, beauty contests, and songbird competitions are out of tune with much of forward-moving revolution. End of special broadcast from Government of Bureau in Jakarta. Radio Indonesia now returns you to rock and roll program. Follows immediately. Once again, decadent Western democracies show hand by exporting rotten rock and roll music, which will be heard in just a moment as horrible example of Western culture. Stay tuned.
Speaking of horrible, we have here WOR AM and FM New York. It's funny how one thing leads to it. Just it popped into my mind, decadent Western culture. WOR AM and FM New York. And we have with us just one thing leads to the next. At 9:15 every morning, Peter and Mary, Peter Lynn Hayes and Mary Healy, come on. And they are there for 45 minutes to talk and things. And it's very entertaining. That's Peter and Mary tomorrow morning at 9:15. Speaking of the moon culture, we also have with us tonight Mandarin House. And if you have not tried Sinister Mandarin cooking, very subtle and containing many rare oriental spices and herbs, guaranteed to put you in wonderful moon mood, ready to accept culture of all kinds. That means if you try Mandarin food, you'll be ready to swing. But actually, if you have never really tried Mandarin cooking, there are many world connoisseurs of fine cooking who parallel Mandarin cooking with the finest of the French cuisines. I'm not here tonight to beat the drums for snobism, but the food is great, and if you have not tried it, I would recommend Mandarin House on 13th Street between 6th and 7th here in the village. Far Sinister Village! Also on 2nd Avenue, just north of 57th Street. That's Mandarin East. There are two of them, and they are superb, right? Have bar! Okay. You'll not get nervous then. And now we return once again to the world of nuttiness. Speaking of that, as long as we're talking about the moon, I don't know quite how to bring this in. Well, let's say this would be the way it would be broadcast. This is an actual item here. Let's say this is the way it would be broadcast if it was reported on Radio Jakarta. If it was reported on Radio Jakarta, you would probably think it shows un-American attitude once again. Bring up...
Once again, Radio Jakarta brings you special broadcasts illustrating decadent Western democracies at very absolute rotten worst. Our special program entitled Ratfink now brings you a report from U.S. News Service on American democracy. A special study guide for use in high schools and colleges has been prepared by 20th Century Fox, covering historical period of its new film, Cleopatra. Age of Cleopatra comes complete with a wall map plus photographs taken from film. The study guide was written for 20th Century Fox by John S. Ellsworth Jr. and Alan E. Samuel, both PhDs, on Yale University faculty. And so PR man marches on in Western culture. Once again, it has become quite evident now to thinking oriental mind that no longer does movie follow history. History now follows movie. Eventually, all history books will be based on scripts produced by Samuel Goldman. Looking forward to Story of World War II as done by John Ford, new special history book being produced by Princeton. Radio Jakarta salutes all Oyato listeners and bids you listen once again tomorrow at same time, 0815 hours Greenwich Mean Time, to Operation Wattfink, exposing Western democracies for what they are at rotten worst.
Oh, boy. I don't know whether it's the moon or whether it's me. I can't tell. Kind of like, so you know, you, oh boy, that was kind of a nice cough. I about once a year do a thing about, I just can't help it, and I'm going to do it tonight about the moon. Hey, do you have that secret sinister music up there for me, Eddie? Hold it there just a moment now. Hold it there. I'll give you the cue. That old moon, that old devil moon, it has many things going for it. And I have a vague feeling that a lot of people are going to be very disappointed to have them actually reach it. You know, there's something unreachable about the moon, and since it's unreachable, you know, it's always been up there, looking down silently, sinister, just quietly leaning there. Sometimes it's beautiful, other times it's cold. Sometimes it makes you feel a sort of a yearning, poetic. Another time there's a vague fear, and you want to rush out of the house and hit it. Well, as a matter of fact, I'll never forget one time I took my BB gun out, and yes, I remember doing this, actually taking my BB gun out in the backyard and popping away at the moon with my Daisy Model 200. Yeah, it's a carbine model. I'd shoot those BBs up there, and I had a funny feeling of, I suppose you might say, borderline conscience, that I was doing something terrible. I assumed I was hitting it. I really did. I assumed I was hitting it, and then, of course, I couldn't really believe I was hitting it because, that was a rotten BB gun. I thought I might hit it, and then I thought again I wasn't hitting it, but I realized in that little native human thing inside of you that I was doing a wrong thing. In spite of the fact that my BB obviously was falling short some 97 trillion miles, and as it bounced off Doppler's garage on its way down, nevertheless, the symbolic act of shooting at the moon with an eye towards bringing it down in flames was wrong. It really was wrong. I knew that. And I suppose it's this reason that there is a thing that lies right underneath all of our, our subcutaneous cultures, all the things that we've learned. A little thing lies underneath. There are some things you shouldn't do. I think this is one of the reasons why a lot of people are objecting, even though they're complaining, how much money it's going to cost, it's going to moon, it's going to raise the taxes. Ah, taxes, what are you going to do with the money anyway, you know, so what? We keep yelling about all the various things. A guy with 19 cars is yelling about taxes. It's going to cost a lot to go to the moon, you know, what difference it make. I never hear little guys living over delicatessens on $6 a year hollering about how much it's going to cost to go to the moon. The only guys who ever yell are the guys with the great big fat-ended Cadillacs, you know, these great big guys. Yeah, they're always yelling. So I guess them has got it once more. It's really, I suppose, what the basic premise is there. But nevertheless, there is something that prompts us to do this, I think, that goes beyond money, because secretly all of us know that the money isn't why we're yelling. Because it really is. It's not... the reason it's that vague feeling that there are certain things you shouldn't know, that we're liable to unlock the last door and it's all going to blow up. Did you see the picture on the cover or on the front page of the New York Times a couple of days ago of this giant galactic explosion? That was something like 10 million years ago it happened. Of course, it took 10 million light years for it to get here, and they took the picture of it. But 10 million light years or no, it blew up. Boy, did it blow up. And I'm looking at this, and of course nobody has, there's a lot of physical ideas that people have, theories about it. But I suspect there could very well have been some real wise guy up in that galaxy finally decided to make the eventual discovery. And he was going to discover it all. And 10 million years later, we are getting it on a photographic film, the result of his fantastic experiment. It finally did it. And the whole shebang went up in an enormous Roman candle that is still being heard in galaxies billions of miles away. And one day, of course, we're liable to do that, whether it's good or not. But the moon has always hung up there. It's always hung quietly up there. Have you ever looked through one of the greatest sights I ever saw in my life? And I'm a secret astronomy fan. I've always wanted a telescope. If I ever if I ever spend any money on something that I really want, that's one of the things I'd love to have is a really good telescope. But one of the greatest sights I ever saw was Saturn. And have you ever seen the moons of Saturn? Revolving around Saturn up there. It's you just cannot believe what Saturn looks like if you look at it through a good telescope. It looks like some kind of, well, it doesn't look like any sort of heaven, natural heavenly body. It looks like some kind of, a Calder mobile of some kind. It has an eerie luminescent quality to it, of some sort of unearthly Christmas tree ornament. And it's wildly exciting to look at. You've seen it. You've seen pictures of it, haven't you? All the moons revolving around Saturn. Well, even those little moons hanging up there look spooky. They just look spooky. I don't know what to say. They do. They look very scary. And I don't know, but what it has had a profound influence on people for thousands of years, that moon. I'm curious what it must have done. You know, there is much evidence that early man was a moon worshiper. That early man was a moon. Certain tribes of early men had based certain religions on the moon as a mother figure. The moon was considered a mother. And the terrible, rotten father would arrive and chase away this beautiful, luminescent mother every day. That would be the sun. And the sun was always rotten. It came out. Of course, then later on, another theory grew up that all evil sprang from the moon. And the only thing that stopped it from taking over the world was the great high-riding sun would come out of the east and kick the moon out of the sky for a while. So that was another theory. Went on and on and on like that. And, of course, there's still other theories that go even further than that. But the mother-father figure has always been somehow associated with the moon. We always think of the moon as feminine. And most people think of the sun, of course, as masculine. Old Sol, father's son. You've heard it referred to that, I'm sure. And it's never mother's son. It's always a masculine thing up there. And the moon has always been feminine. Now, men, and I should say men in this case, are generally the people who create the myths and write the wild romantic stories. Now, since we do assume that the woman is, that the moon is woman, this is the symbolic reference to the moon, so it's a woman, that naturally the men who create the myths would assume that the same unearthly, often, there was a time when men considered women a completely different species. Are you aware of that? Oh, sure. They were really a different species completely. And they were at one time considered to be the species that carried in them the seed of evil. and it's still going around. Did you see Virginia Woolf? I mean, the idea is still very prevalent, but then, of course, looking at the women around them, the guys would then put the same qualities in the moon from the women they saw. There's an interesting book on this, a beautifully written piece of business on the moon worship as a matriarchal figure, as opposed to the sun as a paternal figure. A book by Vardis Fisher. You've heard me talk about Fisher occasionally. Vardis Fisher wrote a thing called The Birth of Adam, I believe it was called. The Birth of It is from his Testament of Man series. But very interesting theories. And these theories have been held for a long time by guys who have dealt with prehistoric man, very early man particularly. Because as you get closer to history, of course, man changes and evolves. And the very earliest of men, which go into the prehistoric periods, are the periods of the great moon worshippers and the sun worshippers. Of course, the sun was feared. Men would burn and die of thirst from the sun. And so at one time they feared it. Now here's an example. I have a poem. I'm going to read a poem here. One of the best moon poems of all, I think, because it does not necessarily describe the moon. It describes the aura created by the moon. Slowly, silently, now the moon walks the night in her silver shoon. This way and that she peers and sees silver fruit upon silver trees. One by one, the casements catch her beams beneath the silvery thatch. Crouched in his kennel, like a log with paws of silver, sleeps the dog. From their shadowy coat, the white breasts peep of doves in a silver-feathered sleep. A harvest mouse goes scampering by with silver claws and silver eye, and moveless fish in the water gleam by silver reeds in a silver stream. Isn't that a lovely poem? That's Walter de la Mare. He's done some other things, though. When Sam goes back in memory, it is to where the sea breaks on the shingle, emerald green, in white foam, endlessly. He says, with small brown eyes on mine, I used to keep awake and lean from my window in the moon, watching those billows break, and half a million tiny hands and eyes like sparks of frost would dance and come tumbling into the moon on every breaker tossed. And all across from star to star, I've seen the watery sea with not a single ship in sight, just ocean there. And me, and heard my father snore. And once, as sure as I'm alive, out of those wallowing moon-flecked waves, I saw a mermaid dive. Head and shoulders above the wave, plain as I see you now, combing her hair, now back, now front, her two eyes peeping through, calling me, Sam. Quiet like, Sam. But me, I never went. Making believe I kind of thought 'twas someone else she meant. Wonderful, lovely there she sat, singing the night away, all in the solitudinous sea of that there lonely bay. Perhaps, and then he'd smooth his hairless mouth, well, perhaps if 'twere now, son, perhaps if I heard a voice say, Sam, well, morning would find me gone. Lovely, isn't it? Walter de la Mare. You want to hear another one of his? He has an interesting attitude towards things lost. Things just lost. And lost in that secret way that we all know we have lost things. Now, how to describe that, I don't know, except that it's there. We all have a sense hanging with us. And the moon does this, of course. I don't think the sun ever gives you a sense of lost. But the moon always does. You always have a vague feeling that you're goofing off when you look at the moon. That you should have done something, or somehow you've got to get going, or but then you don't know what to do. You sort of run around the fire hydrant and get in the car and look up and get a rag out and clean the windshield. But that's not enough, you know. I mean, that's quite not enough. And the Walter de la Mare touches on this always. I have heard a lady this night, lissome and jimp and slim, calling me over the heather, neath the beech boughs, dusk and dim. I followed a lady this night, followed her far and lone. Fox and adder and weasel know the ways that we have gone. I sit at my supper mid honest faces, and crumble my crust, and say not, in the long-drawn drawl of the voices talking the hours away. I'll go to my chamber under the gable, and the moon will lift her light in at my lattice from over the moorland, hollow and still and bright. And I know she will shine on a lady of witchcraft, gladness and grief to see, who has taken my heart with her nimble fingers, calling in my dreams to me, who has led me a dance by dell and dingle, my human soul to win, made me a changeling to my own mother, a stranger to my kin. Oh, boy. He just doesn't say. Do you want to hear some more of these? I'd like to read this one again, because this one has to be done just right. Slowly, silently, now the moon walks the night in her silver shoon. This way and that she peers and sees silver fruit upon silver trees. One by one, the casements catch her beams beneath the silvery thatch. Crouched in his kennel like a log, with paws of silver, sleeps the dog. From their shadowy coat the white breast peep of doves in a silver-feathered sleep. A harvest mouse goes scampering by, with silver claws and silver eye. And moveless fish in the water gleam by silver reeds in a silver stream. You want to hear some more of these? All kinds. Yeah, there's all kinds of things. This is another moon one. He doesn't mention the moon, but it's there. And this is an odd German poet who was not only a poet, but as most good poets are, he was also a philosopher, also a playwright. And you could see all three of these elements of his writing in this poem. Under the linden, the music is gay. The couples are gossiping loudly. And two are dancing whom nobody knows. They carry themselves so proudly. Now here, now there, they glide and sway in wave-like measures beguiling. They bow to each other, and as they nod, she whispers, gently smiling, "A water pink is hanging from your cap, my fair young dancer. It only grows in the depths of the sea. You are no mortal man, sir. You are a merman. And to lure these village maids, your wish is. I knew you at once by your watery eyes and your teeth as sharp as fishes. Now here, now there, they glide and sway in wave-like measures beguiling. They bow to each other, and as they nod, he answers, gently smiling, my lovely lady, tell me why your hand is so cold and shiny, and why is the border of your gown so damp? and draggled and briny. I knew you at once by your watery eyes and your bow, so mocking and tricksy. You're never a daughter of Earth, my dear. You are my cousin, the Nixie. The fiddles are silent. The dancing is done. They part with a ripple of laughter. They know each other too well and will try to avoid such a meeting hereafter. drink, lonesome water. Weren't but a tad then up in the laurel thick digging for sang. Came on a place where the stones was holler. Something below him tinkled and rang. Dug where I heard it, dripping below me. Should have known better, should have been wise. Leant down and drank it. Clutching and gripping the overhung cliff with the ferns in my eyes. Twarn't no tame water, I knowed in a minute. Must have been laying there projecting round since winter went home. Must have laid like a cushion where the feet of the blossoms was tucked in the ground. Tasted a heart leaf. And that smells the sweetest, pawpaw and spice bush and wild briar rose. Must have been counting the heels of the spruce pines and neighboring round where Angelica grows. I drunk lonesome water. I knowed in a minute. Never learnt nothing from then till today. Nothing worth learning. I'm bound to the hills. I can't get away. Mean sort of dried up old groundhoggy feller laying out cold here watching the sky, poor as a whippoorwill, bent like a grass blade, counting up stars till they count too high. I know where the gray foxes uses up yander. Know what'll cure ye of physic or chills. But I never been away from here. Never got going. I drunk lonesome water. I'm bound to the hills. Isn't that a weird one? Drunk lonesome water. Just bound to the hills. Never got going. Isn't that a scary line? I will repeat that line for you right now. Never got going. Oh, yeah, I know. Yes. Yes, this is a moon night. You want to hear some more of these? Really? Listen to this one. This isn't exactly moon. All of a sudden, the big nasturtiums rose in the night from the ocean's bed, rested a while in the light of the morning, turning the sand dunes tiger red. They covered the statue of Abraham Lincoln. They climbed to the top of our church's spire. Grandpa, Grandpa, come to the window. Come to the window. Our world's on fire. Big nasturtiums in the high Sierras. Big nasturtiums in the lands below. Our trains are late. And our planes have fallen. And out in the ocean, the whistles blow. Over the fields and over the forests, over the living and over the dead. I never expected the big nasturtiums to come in my lifetime, Grandpa said. That was Robert Beverly Hale. Oh. Yes, it's the moon out there. Here's another one by the same man who did the one of the mermaid. He also, you see, because of that strange German mysticism, strange, it's there. It's just as legitimate, I suppose, as our optimism, which is another kind of mysticism, runs through everything he has ever written. Listen to this one. A strange foreboding is over me. My heart is idly fraught. I have heard of an olden story that will not out of my thought. The air is cool and darkling, and the Rhine is still below, The peak of the mountain is sparkling in evening afterglow. And there sits, and there gleams, a maiden. Yonder, so high and fair, with golden jewels laden, combing her golden hair. She combs it with a comb that is golden, and ever singing is she, a song of mysterious, olden, and mighty melody. It seizes with wild sorrow the boatman ferrying by, and he recks not of rock or of narrow as he gazes only on high. I doubt not the wave will devour the boat and the boatman ere long. And that was the Lorelei's power, and that was the Lorelei's song. this attitude, the Lorelei attitude, is the attitude, or let's just say the Lorelei legend, has been applied to the moon almost continually throughout the history of moon writing. I wish I had time. Let's see, this is Thursday night. Some night next week, I think, would be a good time to do a series of Japanese writings about the moon. They're interested in this phenomenon, more so, really, than American writers are and Western writers are. They approach it in a different way. Strangely enough, in most Japanese writing, I shouldn't say strangely, it's just a fact, in most Japanese writing, and in large measure, Oriental writing in general, the moon is treated as a masculine thing, as opposed to a feminine attitude in Western writing. yeah. But at night, I would wander away, and would fling on each side my low flowing locks, and lightly vault from the throne, and play with the merman in and out of the rocks. We would run to and fro and hide and seek on the broad sea walls and the crimson shells, whose silvery spikes are nighest the sea. But if any came near, I would call and shriek, and down the steep like a wave I would leap, from the diamond ledges that jut from the dells. Alfred Lord Tennyson. Very different from Heine, the German. And certainly not quite the same as Walter de la Mare. Sir Olaf, he rideth west and east to bid the folk to his bridal feast. On the wold are dancing an elvish band. An Earl King's daughter proffers her hand. Now welcome, Sir Olaf. What's haste with thee? Step into our circle and dance with me, said the elf king. And they began to dance round and round and round under the moon.